National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The firing of Dr. Lena Wen as president of Planned Parenthood has set off a firestorm of controversy surrounding the pro-abortion giant. And it's exposed again the truth that Planned Parenthood is, as Dr. Wen herself wrote, not about health care, but politics. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Catherine Hadro, host of EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. Plus, we get Catherine's insights into the recent social media explosion over women and preaching. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the Register, and Catherine Hadro, host of EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly, has been following Planned Parenthood for years. The last week surrounding the firing of Dr. Lena Wen as president after her tenure of less than a year has been a source of considerable interest to the pro-life community. And of course, Catherine has covered it on Pro-Life Weekly. Catherine, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. And you're right. I know there is so much to discuss about that major news out of Planned Parenthood.
It's just been an incredible year, I think, for the pro-life movement. And I think some of what has been happening, unrelated to Planned Parenthood, if you will, has created an environment of pressure for them. So what do you think has led to this moment that they have ousted their president of less than a year?
Wow. Well, you know, from what we can tell, Dr. Wen has been, from what we can tell, pretty forthright with what happened when last week she tweeted out that she was fired after a secret meeting. And that, to me, was surprising that she put that out there. You could tell she was shocked, as we all were, by this news, because it had only been 8 months on the job. And that is just not a good look for any company. So right. It does reveal this new level of tumultuousness inside of the abortion giant. And as she put it, it's because of philosophical differences within Planned Parenthood. This debate about, okay, what is their mission? Is it to be this healthcare resource for women, or is it primarily to provide and to promote abortions? And based on Dr. Wen's departure, it seems as if Planned Parenthood is admitting, no, this is our focus now. We are doubling down on abortion.
Absolutely. And it seems to me that there was a lot that perhaps she was slow to respond to in the last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we've seen around the country is are states that have been enacting laws that help to curb further abortion rights. Basically, these are some pro-life laws that we can welcome right. as a pro-life community. But that's a threat to Planned Parenthood. And it could be that some of this was beyond her scope. She just didn't seem to be able to respond to some of the legislative pressures that were placed on her. And, of course, she was a very different person than Cecile Richards, who was her predecessor.
I would agree with that. And I think with all these pro-life laws happening, with the fact that there is this increasing dialogue about the possibility of Roe v. Wade being overturned, there's a lot of anger amongst people who are advocating for abortion. And I think Planned Parenthood is seeing themselves wanting to be this voice to channel all of that anger and aggression. And I don't think Dr. Wen was a good fit for that. I mean, she is, like you said, she doesn't have this background in political advocacy as their prior president did, Cecile Richards. She's a medical doctor. She's an ER doctor. And I think she took this job really thinking she was going to be able to help women. And she said she wanted to expand their healthcare services. She launched this campaign shortly after she became president called This is Healthcare. This national campaign, she toured around saying she wanted to add mental health services, you know, treatment for diabetes management. She wanted to help with opiate addiction. But that did just not jive with what Planned Parenthood's true mission is, which is not healthcare for women. It really is abortion.
And can we add to that list perhaps mammograms? Because many, if not most, Planned Parenthoods don't actually offer that. Is that right?
That's right. And actually, there was a New York Times report that came out recently really speaking about one of the reasons people were pushing back against Dr. Wen wanting to promote these other services was the fact that, well, they're not they're not standard Planned Parenthood services. And we've seen in the past Planned Parenthood in some way claim or advertise or make it sound as if they provide mammogram screenings. But we know that is not true. That has been widely debunked. They do not provide mammogram screenings. They do provide references. And so because when they made those claims in the past, it's opened themselves to criticism and controversy and a lot of pushback. So according to the New York Times, there were a lot of Planned Parenthood staffers who were worried that, well, if Dr. Wen is going around saying and promoting and advocating for these other services, and we don't have that at our clinic, it's not a standard part of our care, that's just going to open ourselves up to more criticism. But again, all of this has been very revealing that they do not have a thorough, great, robust healthcare program.
But doesn't this actually then raise the obvious question of what are you doing with the $500 million a year or so that the government's handing you?
Right. My intuition, my instinct is that this is just going to open up again the debate, the congressional efforts to defund Planned Parenthood and President Trump's efforts to defund Planned Parenthood. We've seen some of that with the Title X Protect Life rule, which defunds them from their Title X family planning dollars, which is nearly $60 million a year. But it's not their largest source of federal funding, which is, like you said, that $500 million.
And can you fill us in on exactly what the latest change does, the Protect Life aspect?
Right. And so, and it's been said that this is going to be put into effect immediately. So what that does is it strips groups that provide abortions from being able to receive these Title X family planning dollars. And, you know, we as Catholics can have our own discussion as to what family planning is. I know it is National Family Planning Awareness Week, NSP Week, so that's a whole other discussion. But they have been stripped of these Title X dollars, which, again, is their second largest source of federal funding.
This is right. So a Catholic news agency has actually been covering this funding war in a great way. And the Register is right there with them. Peter Jesserer Smith has been writing about Planned Parenthood over the last year with basically changes in their whole funding model, the pressure that has been placed on them from the policy level as well as legislatively, and also, you know, just is their legacy kind of changing? And so take a look at Peter Jesserer Smith's articles at ncregister.com. There's a lot there that he has dissected. Joan Frawley-Desmond has also put out a great blog this week on Planned Parenthood's true mission exposed by ousted CEO. It's gotten a lot of play on the website. It's been in our trending area, and it's really worth the read. And it's a lot of it is from Dr. Lena Wen's own perspective, as has been reported by The Times and by an op-ed that she wrote, and just identifying exactly why she left. But, you know, Catherine, one of the things that has really struck me is that oftentimes the pro-life movement, especially centers, health centers, crisis pregnancy centers, and women's health centers that are Catholic or Christian, have been criticized for bearing a false message, you know, for falsely advertising what they do. And they've received criticism for that, especially from people who would support Planned Parenthood. And what's happening here is that now that same criticism can be said of Planned Parenthood, that they are spinning, you know, they're hiding what their true mission is. It's a strange reversal. And what it dawns on me is that this is a fight for the hearts and minds of women. I mean, that's what seems to be at play here.
That's right. You're so right. We've seen in recent times a lot of this campaign to brand pro-life clinics as these fake clinics. There's been a lot of hit pieces on pro-life centers, but you know, being someone who has been able to interview women who have benefited from their, from, you know, speaking with women who volunteer there, it's so obvious to me that they're the ones walking alongside these women who are in vulnerable positions, who find themselves in an unexpected and unplanned pregnancy. And they're the ones holding their hands and empowering them to choose life. And they're there for them. You know, there's also this other myth that pro-lifers are only pro-birth, but it is these very pro-life pregnancy centers that are with these women after this baby is born. They're, you know, they're the ones giving them free clothing and diapers and parenting classes and oftentimes being a part of their life until this child is in kindergarten, if not beyond. So you're right. It really does change this narrative that Planned Parenthood has been pushing. And I did speak with Abby Johnson this week for EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. And she is, you know, of course, she worked at Planned Parenthood for years as a clinic manager before publicly leaving about a decade ago. And I spoke with her about Dr. Wen's exit. And, you know, I spoke to her about this debate that we're seeing, this internal debate that's now exposed to all of us. What is their mission? Is it healthcare or abortion? And I asked if that debate was the case 10 years ago. And she said, no, not really. We really said that, you know, we really believed and thought this is a healthcare provider for women. And so even in just 10 years, there's been this major shift from Planned Parenthood's mission and from abortion advocates. They're almost admitting, yeah, we're not a healthcare service. We have this extreme view on abortion, and that's what we want to double down on.
Absolutely. And, you know, what strikes me is that while Abby, you know, attests to what was 10 years ago in terms of the perception, somehow Dr. Lena Wen thought that was the case now. I mean, she accepted the job on the premise that she was going to be doing healthcare.
Right. And so that's why I just am praying for her so much. And I think we all should be, because it seems as if she was taking them at their word that they were a healthcare service, and her eyes were really open to what their mission is. Something that I also found pretty telling in her op-ed in the New York Times, in which she said, this is why I left Planned Parenthood, was she said she got a lot of pushback when she would meet with people who had different views on the abortion issue, that other people didn't like it. It sounded as if she was trying to cultivate some dialogue with people who mm-hmm. disagree with her. I would want to point out, though, in her article, she only listed meeting with pro-lifers who still support abortion, which we know that is not pro-life. That is an oxymoron. Right. Or people who consider themselves pro-life but still support Planned Parenthood. But again, Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest abortion provider, committing over 300,000 abortions in the year. So you cannot be pro-life and support Planned Parenthood. But my hope is, I was surprised to see she even wanted to have dialogue with people who have these different views. And my hope is she sits across the table from someone who has a truly 100% pro-life view, and just pray that her eyes are open to this.
Absolutely. That should be the prayer for all of us. I'm sorry, Matthew, I cut you off.
Jump in. I was going to say, and to that point, the Catherine Jean Lopez's piece in the National Review on praying for a conversion miracle for Dr. Liana Wen and other sort of pro-choice women, she talks about the fact that doctors have actually been very publicly saying that they are praying for her, especially given Dr. Wen's own personal story. That seems to have sort of intersected or crossed paths with the her role at Planned Parenthood and the way that she was treated at Planned Parenthood.
That's right. You're speaking.
That's right. Just 10 days before she was publicly fired, she had written an op-ed in the Washington Post sharing that she recently had a miscarriage, which is just so devastating. So I think that's why it was doubly shocking when Planned Parenthood suddenly fired her after they knew this. They knew this fact about her. They knew that she was suffering this right now, and yet they still got rid of her from a secret meeting.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is all the more reason to pray and to just pray for the ways that the Holy Spirit can work in her life to help reveal the truth of human life. Catherine, you mentioned the show, EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly, and what was coming up, but I do want to remind people of when it airs. So it's Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern and Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern. And Catherine teased the coverage of this show this weekend, but what do you have that you expect in the coming weeks, Catherine? Can you give us a further tease of what we might find?
Yeah. Yeah, I can give a little preview. Well, we have the second round of the Democratic presidential debates coming up. We saw in the first round how much the abortion issue came up, and these, it seemed as if everyone was just rushing to come off as the most extreme abortion candidate. We are expecting some of the same for the second round. So on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, you can expect to have some solid pro-life analysis looking at that. I also recently sat down with a medical doctor to speak about maternal mortality rates. We're seeing abortion advocates point to maternal mortality as another reason for abortion, but she really debunks common claims that we hear. So really looking forward to sharing those on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. And thanks for sharing the times Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern and again on Sundays at 10 a.m.
Well, Catherine, we want to continue the discussion with you. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Catherine Hadro, host of EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. We'll talk about women and preaching. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Matthew Bunsen.
The National Catholic Register is that rarest of institutions in Catholic media, striving always to be faithful, orthodox, timely, and dedicated to journalistic excellence. Catholics know they can always depend on the Register for the news they need to know from an authentically Catholic perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host here on Register Radio. We've been having a conversation with Catherine Hadro, host of EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly, and now we're going to talk about a commentary that Catherine wrote for the Register. And it's on this strange controversy that has broke out once again about the role of women in the church. And so this past week was the feast of St. Mary Magdalene. It's a wonderful occasion for us to reflect on the role of women as evangelizers, because, of course, she was the one who first met Christ at the tomb and went back and brought the good news to the disciples. But, of course... This has always been a subject of controversy, which is what is women's role? Is does she have a big enough role in the church? And this week, controversy broke out over women preaching at Mass. So, Catherine, you wrote this piece for the Register about why women can't preach. But would you set up how this latest controversy over the role of women in the church has erupted?
Yes. On social media, it seemed as if the Catholic Corner was really debating this topic this week, which was about women and whether or not they should be preaching at Mass. And it started because Jesuit priest Father James Martin tweeted out an article that was recently put in America Magazine, written by a woman who had said she previously used to preach at Mass, that she really loved it. She had permission from her priest. She enjoyed preaching at Mass. Then there were some restrictions put into place, and she no longer could, and she was very saddened by that. Father James Martin tweeted out that story and said that it was stupefying to him that women cannot preach at Mass. I will say I'm the kind of person where I typically don't find social media debates fruitful or productive, but I was grateful to take more than 140 characters and write some of whatever response. You know, and as a Catholic woman in the church, I did want to have a share in this conversation. And I was really struck by the fact that, you know, if we think that preaching at Mass is the summit of us being able to use our gifts and share the truth, then we really have a loss of imagination. And also, we are not remembering the great amount of saints before us who have changed the church. I mean, I think of St. Mary Magdalene, right, for example, who we celebrated. And I think of this great woman that she is. I think of St. Bridget of Sweden we're celebrating this week, and St. Anne also this week. And no words of hers are found in Scripture. And yet, as the mother of Mary and the grandmother to Jesus, we know how formative she was. So I was grateful for the opportunity to just kind of take a step back and have a conversation on this.
Well, we can add to that list Catherine of Siena. All she seemed to accomplish was to change lives for centuries with her writings, but also to convince the Pope to move back to Rome, something that no man had ever been able to do. It's forgotten, too, that, and you quote the canon law, you quote it exactly, the diocesan bishop may never dispense from the norm which reserves the homily to the sacred ministers. I could think of probably 100 men who could preach competently. Someone like Dr. Scott Hahn would probably be a great homilist at a mass. He can't preach either.
No, right. You know, it's so interesting, Matthew. I mean, when we were trying to think of who could write a piece for us this week to discuss this topic, we threw out your name, Catherine, and we thought, okay, Catherine can do this because she's got, in a way, a pulpit, right? I mean, you've got a television show, and so you're able to speak and teach and even preach, if you will. But one of the thoughts that occurred to us editors as we were discussing who might write a piece is it could be a man or a woman, because any layman and or laywoman are prohibited from speaking, from preaching from the pulpit during Mass. So it was really a no-brainer that this is a manufactured problem. But we were delighted, Catherine, to have you write, and I thought one of the things that made it so fitting was that you had tweeted out a quote from Mother Angelica, who herself had a very unique place in preaching, if you will.
Right. I mean, I'd be remiss to, as we're talking about influential people in the church who are not priests preaching at Mass, we work at EWTN, which was founded by a poor Claire nun. Who she didn't preach at Mass, but she created out of an Alabama garage what is now the largest global Catholic religious network. I was kind of looking back at if she had anything to say on this, I was struck by this one quote, and I'll read it right now because it really did strike me. Women in the priesthood, that's just a power play. That's ridiculous. As it is, women have more power in the church than anybody. They build and run the schools. God has designed that men be priests. They can't afford to deny God his sovereign rights. Mother Angelica, spoken like only Mother Angelica
exactly
could say. And, you know, and yes, I'm so grateful. And I recognize that I do have the opportunity with a platform with EWTN Pro Life Weekly. But the fact of the matter is that every baptized Catholic is called to evangelize. It's your responsibility to evangelize the good news. And it's also your responsibility to discern individually how is God calling you to do that. And maybe it is a television show or a radio show or a podcast, or maybe it's having a conversation at your family dinner table or sharing something on social media. Get creative, you know, but if you look at the lives of the saints, it's incredible how God moves and works in their lives. And God is so creative, too. You know, he thinks beyond the pulpit. And I think we as women have a really powerful role in the church.
Absolutely. You know, I wanted to be able to write this piece myself, and I'm not at a place right now that that's my pulpit, so to speak. That's not where I am in preaching, is through writing at this point in time. So when I saw you writing what you wrote, I was so grateful. It's like somebody's got to say this, and you said it well. How has it been received? Have you entered into the social media conversation?
Yes, I have already had a few friends text it back to me and say, you know, thank you for sharing this, which has been really refreshing. And I will say it's been young women sharing that. Which I think is indicative of, hey, yeah, let us women speak for ourselves on this. And again, just empowering each one of us to think, how can God use us? One saint that I mentioned as well is my confirmation saint, Saint Therese of Lisieux. And again, she didn't preach a Mass. She didn't leave her cloistered convent throughout her religious life. And yet shortly after her death, her story of a soul reached millions quickly.
Right.
So, you know, we can't limit what God can do. with what we are called to do.
I think it's also good to recognize right now the ways that women's roles have been increasing in the church, at least in their involvement in official functions at the Vatican. Not too long ago, I think it was just the beginning of July, that women became an official part, a formal part of the Congregation for Consecrated Life. And it's they were appointed members of that congregation. Solène Tadier, who is one of our Rome reporters, has been reporting on this this development, and she's been speaking to these women, some of the women who were appointed to these roles, finding out more of what exactly they'll be doing. And some of it's a little fuzzy, so we're still in the process of reporting exactly what the women will be doing. But it's an important role, and the archbishop that heads this congregation made a point to say that his name is Archbishop Jose Rodrigo Carballo, and he is the congregation secretary. He made the point to say that there are more women religious congregations, more women religious out there than men religious, and so therefore we really do need to increase the role that they play in this official capacity. And so there's a lot of recognition and of the role of women in official capacities do need to increase in the church, but there are just specific ways for that to increase, and preaching at the pulpit is not one of them. Becoming ordained minister is not one of them, and the church has been very, very clear on that. So, Catherine, we thank you so much for spending this time with us today, this just about a half an hour of your time, which we love, so we appreciate you.
Oh, I'm the grateful one. Thank you both so much, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.